Live from Texas, it's John Mayo with the Mayo Report.
The sales estimates we'll be talking about this episode are for the top 300 comics through Diamond to retailers for June 2008. And keep in mind, these are only estimates and only what's sold to retailers. Conventional wisdom is this accounts for around 90% of the overall sales, so it's pretty good information for using for trending and just kind of how a lot of the titles are doing in general.
And I guess the other point is that it's much more accurate for Marvel and DC and some of the larger publishers than from someone who might have much lower sales. I think we were talking about on the Comic-Con one, for instance, you know, some of the lower-end publishers might actually sell a decent amount through their website, at conventions, and through other venues that are never going to show up on Diamond. So their numbers could be skewed by a larger percentage. Maybe not by any more copies, but, you know, 300 copies makes a big difference when you're selling, you know, that's a 10% if you're selling 3,000 copies, right?
Yeah.
And if you're selling 150,000 copies, 300 copies is in the noise.
Yep, exactly. But this is the best information that's available. Obviously, nobody's going to have information on how convention sales are going. They don't release information on how sales direct from the publishers are going. We don't have access to the book scan data. And even that's not all-encompassing. So we're doing the best we can with the data available, and I think we can learn some very interesting stuff. For instance, this month what we can learn is that for the aggregate total sales for the top 300 comics, Marvel had 54.16% of the units sold, and they had 54.12% of the dollars sold for the top 300 comics. So Marvel doing pretty well these days.
Yeah.
DC doing okay, but only had 30.38% of the total units for the top 300 and 29.19% of the dollars. That's not to say DC's doing badly, it's just that Marvel's doing a hell of a lot better. Dark Horse is in that kind of third position with only about 4.05% of those total units and only about 3.8% of those total dollars. What's interesting is in fourth place is IDW. IDW's kind of been expanding their line lately with things like the Doctor Who stuff, the Star Trek stuff, a few other new titles like FX, Lock and Key, things of that nature.
They jumped over Image is very surprising.
Yeah. They've got 3.34% of the total units and 4.16% of the total dollars, which, as you mentioned, does beat out Image, which only had 2.63% of the total units and 2.88% of the total dollars. So IDW is starting to be a bit more of a major player than they were. They're squarely between Dark Horse and Image and beat both of them out by dollars, actually, this month.
That's very interesting.
You know, it's nice to see, because, I mean, for me, we've got kind of, I tend to group things in three categories for these publishers. We've got the top dogs of Marvel and DC. These are the ones that are going to have that well over 10%, well over 20% usually, of the top 300 sales every month. You then have those that are kind of the lower rung, this month would be the percent or under group of the total aggregate sales for the top 300. And then you've got kind of that middle ground that are doing somewhere above that 1%, around that 5%. It used to be more of a 5 to 10% kind of a thing when there was a better spread among the publishers. These days, Dark Horse, Image, now IDW, and Dynamite are all doing between that 1 and 5% or one and a little over 4% really of that aggregate sales, because Marvel and DC are dominating the overall sales. Because, I mean, you take the percentage of the units for the top 300 accounted for by Marvel and DC, and that's 84.51% of the units. You do that by dollars, and they accounted for 83.31%. So, I mean, there's just not that much of the sales left for all these other publishers to fight over.
Yeah, wow, that is, you know, a huge turnaround, I think, down on the lower end.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because always, like, just rolling off the tongue of, you know, Dark Horse and Image as being a whole different tier than a lot of the other ones. And, you know, having Dynamite and having IDW actually pass, but having Dynamite up in that area too. I mean, there is that second tier of publishers has expanded nicely. I mean, it's a good thing to have more competition down there.
It's a great thing.
Kind of wish that, you know, they were all, you know, getting more like, you know, 5-10% instead of, you know, 2-5%. But
I mean, it's possible that we could see eventually IDW or Dynamite making a play for getting to be a premier publisher and in that front half of previews. You know, we've never seen, since Diamond went to that split format about 10 years ago or so, we've never seen a publisher move from the back half into that premier publisher section.
Yeah, true. I guess that begs the question of what is the criteria for moving there? Is it just sales? Is it like paying Diamond more money for the space? You know,
I'm thinking planetary alignment, but the only publisher that made a play for it that I recall that had a shot of success was CrossGen, and they were doing right around that 5%, which the scuttlebutt at the time was that's what you had to get to even be considered. But there also seemed to be rumors that the existing premier publishers had kind of potentially a veto right. Whether that's true, whether that's just rumor, I don't know. But, you know, I think you've got to be essentially doing on even footing with the other, at least the lower of the other premier publishers, which in this case is Dark Horse and Image.
Well, I guess the other part is like, do they kick somebody out of that section if they fall below for any consistent point of time? But once you're in, it's like you're in. You're solid.
Pretty much, yeah. My understanding is it's kind of like getting tenure. You know, you pass that thing and you're good. So, but that's, I think, part of why it's so difficult for a publisher to get in there. And a lot of these came about during the distributor wars when these publishers first signed exclusive deals with Diamond. So I think we're seeing a little bit of a shakeup here with IDW, which, I think is great. Hopefully we'll start to see some stuff like that with Dynamite. Who knows? The other ones that I think have that potential. Possibly Devil's Due, possibly Boom. It's really too early to say with Radical, and part of it is they just only have a handful of titles out at the moment, and they seem to be playing it smart and building slowly. Too many publishers have come, expanded their line, and then fizzled. So slow growth is the way to go. So taking a look at the top comics, we are so clearly in event mode these days, it's not even funny. Not just the top one, not just the top two, but the top three comics were all major event titles. As should be no surprise to people, Secret Invasion number 3 topped the list. It did it with an estimated 175,649 units. That's down about 8.6% from the total known sales of the second issue. Now keep in mind that those total known sales for the second issue include reorder activity this month of June. In rank number 2 is Ultimate Origins number 1. It did an estimated 136,351 units. Nice solid opening numbers for that.
I find this one very interesting because Ultimate Origins, and I mean it's sort of an event, but it's sort of a non-event too because they have not been pushing it as an event. I mean it is kind of like where did superpowers come from in the Ultimate Universe? But that's really a corner of the Marvel Universe. But the fact that that book passed Final Crisis, even though it's a number one versus a number two, that an Ultimate book is selling better than DC's big event book is just interesting to me.
For the Ultimate Universe, it is an event book and is kind of leading up to the March on Ultimatum or whatever. I mean, it's kind of the prequel, if you will, to the huge rumored event they're going to be doing.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all. But again, I'm going by marketing.
Fair enough.
Right? Have they been pushing Ultimate Origins, you know, in a marketing sense? I haven't seen it. Whereas Final Crisis, you know, you had house ads for 6 months.
Well, you had a year-long series building up to it.
Yeah,
a
year-long series building up to it and all that. I mean, and sure, you know, DC in general's, you know, selling 15 points or so lower than Marvel, but it just is a little interesting to me that their top push thing that they have really been going out of their way to advertise and market is number 3.
Yeah, I agree with that. At some point, I need to rework my number crunching process to split things out by imprints, because it would be interesting to see how the Ultimate line for Marvel, what percentage of those sales it is for Marvel. In other words, where would the Ultimate line, as if it were a separate publisher, where would it rank on that breakdown of the top 300?
Right, and you can do the same thing for Wildstorm and for Vertigo. And,
exactly, you know, exactly. Yeah. And I think it'd be fairly interesting to do. But yeah, Final Crisis number 2, it came in at 126,020 units or thereabouts. Again, these are estimates. That's down 16.9% from the total known sales of the first issue, and there is reorder activity for that first issue here. And that's below average drop. Normally it's more like a 22% or so drop, so not a bad sign. 126,000 plus units, healthy sales, no question about that. Top selling book for DC, which is good. But yeah, the fact that Ultimate Origins in particular beat it out is kind of interesting. I'm not the least bit surprised that Secret Invasion beat it out by nearly 50,000 units. Marvel just seems to have a bigger and stronger customer base when it comes to these kind of events. Now, there's been some discussion around the internet on, sure, Secret Invasion is selling better to retailers, but is it really selling better to readers? Now, we don't have sell-through information, so we can't categorically say, well, it most definitely is or isn't. But we can deduce some information based on the information we do have available. Now, a lot of people who are saying that Final Crisis is selling better to readers seem to be doing that on the grounds that they're looking at their local store and seeing what's on the shelf.
Interestingly, though, when I go to a lot of comic shops, right, I see a lot of Final Crisis, you know, and that's, you know, Secret Invasion does seem to sell through. I go, Secret Invasion is totally sold out, and there's usually a big stack of Final Crisis on the shelf, and it's usually the ugly cover of Final Crisis. Now, for anyone who's not been to a comic shop, someone at DC has decided that they're going to do 50-50 covers on Final Crisis, and one of the cover is like a nice, full, beautiful image by J.G. Jones. This last issue had Supergirl, and they've had, you know, Green Lantern and Flash. And then the other one is the two sides are like solid bars of color, and there's just the middle third running vertically down the cover, an image that, why, it's usually really horrible looking, at least to me. And it's just a personal opinion, right? But it's not attractive in any way.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't understand. But when I go into the shops, you know, I will see 10 to 25 copies of Final Crisis sitting there. And by and large, they are almost all that cover with the image down the center. And none of the other covers. Maybe there might be one or two. But Secret Invasion, you look for that, and it's totally sold out.
Well, I've been to a couple of stores over the last month or so, what with going to San Diego and stuff, and when I checked here at Austin Books locally, again, Final Crisis, I think they had one of the Green Lantern cover. Everything else was that other cover, and I'm trying to remember how they were doing on Secret Invasion and stuff. But looking at the number of copies left on the rack is the complete wrong way to be doing sell-through information. Because sell-through is a percentage of the number of units they got in that they sold. So if they got 3/5 the number of units for Final Crisis that they got on Secret Invasion, and they have the same number of copies of both left, well, guess what? Secret Invasion still sold better. And, you know, I worked the math on this, and for Final Crisis to actually outsell at the reader level Secret Invasion, there would have to be about 111,000 copies of Secret Invasion 1 still sitting on store shelves while Final Crisis number 1 had a complete sellout. Now, I don't recall DC doing a press release saying that Final Crisis has sold out. And again, that would even be at the distributor level, not at the reader level. But I'm not seeing that kind of push coming out of DC. And if I were at DC and that was the case, I'd be yelling it from the rooftops. So I would imagine they would be doing the same. They're usually pretty good about saying, hey, you know, there's demand for this book, guys. Check it out. So, you know, extrapolating from what you're seeing at a local store to, gee, nationwide, Final Crisis is really doing better, seems really shaky at best. Now, that having been said, I will say that the first month reorder activity for Final Crisis number 1 is stronger than the first month reorder activity for Secret Invasion number 1. But Secret Invasion number 1 in this month of June, which is the second month of reorder activity for it, outpaced the reorder activity for Final Crisis number 1 by about 1,700 units or thereabouts. So, you know, it's just a little bit of a different scale that we're working on here, you know, because Final Crisis number one is topped out so far, looking at the known reorder activity and the known sales, at 151,657 units or thereabouts. And you compare that to the total known sales for Secret Invasion number one, which are now at 262,961 units or thereabouts. Again, that's a difference of that, you know, 111,000 units. So, you know, and this is part of why I go back to thinking that Marvel simply has a stronger and either more loyal or more active fan base than DC right now, you know, and has for quite a while. And this is something that doesn't come overnight. This is something that Marvel's been, you know, building up over decades, and something that I think DC could eventually, you know, overtake, but again, this doesn't come overnight. This takes a hell of a long time to build up that kind of a strong and loyal fan base that'll come out in, you know, the 250,000 plus type numbers for your events. So it's not something DC should be slammed for in any way, shape, or form. The fact that their event is doing the 126 plus thousand, they should be commended for. They're doing well with that. The next item that I thought had a really, really interesting and noticeable bump was in slot number 5, and that was Wolverine 66. It is at 97,978 units, which is an increase of 35,546 units, which equates to a nearly 57% gain over the previous issue. This was part one of the Old Man Logan storyline. This is clearly clicking with readers, or at least retailers had a lot of faith in it. We'll see with the next issue how much of this sticks around, because with the final order cutoff system, retailers would have about the first week of sales for this issue to help them determine, you know, do they need to order more, less, or whatever of issue 67 of Wolverine. But, you know, you see this kind of a bump, and it's like, wow. Because while this is the first part of a storyline, it's not a gimmick cover, it's not a cheap sales gimmick kind of a thing. This has the potential of sticking at least through this storyline.
And again, interestingly, I mean, they did some advertising, but I didn't see a huge advertising push for this.
Agreed.
I noticed it, but they didn't really go all out to advertise this, but the people noticed. And I hadn't been reading Wolverine, buying it for a while, probably since that Enemy of the State storyline, which was, wow, that ended, you know, a couple of years ago, didn't it?
Yeah, that was a while ago.
But this pulled me back in, and I enjoy it. I think they're doing a really good job on this series, so well-deserved.
And this goes to show that if you tell interesting storylines and get people, you know, intrigued by what you're going to be doing, the sales should come. Certainly no guarantee of that, but I see this as a good sign. You know, it's also nice to see something in the top five that's not part and parcel of the major event storylines going on.
And they did not have to restart this as issue number one,
yeah,
to get the bump in sales, which I like also.
Yeah, they could have done, like you said, a new number one. They could have done a huge advertising push. They could have done a lot of things to kind of inflate the numbers, but this seemed to have, you know, kind of earned its way there based on an intriguing story idea.
But this is the same. The differences between the last issue and what they did here is generally the justification that they use for restarting something at a number one. Oh, well, we're bringing in another creative team. We're completely changing the direction. Therefore, we had to make a new number one because. And they've done all those things here, yet they didn't make a new number one. No, they don't have to make a new number one.
I think doing a new number one here would have been a huge mistake, in so much as the premise of the storyline is it's now 50 years later, what's going on with Wolverine in the world. And if you'd done that on a new number one, there would be the expectation from some readers that this is a future storyline for the entire run of the series versus just this one storyline. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So I think it was smart for them not to do it in a number one. But again, you're right. They would have been justified in doing that if they'd felt like it. Coming in just a little outside the top 10 and ranked 12, we've got Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 15. It did 80,424 units. That's down a little under 2% from the previous issue. That's kind of the basic standard attrition. But, I mean, this book is still doing strong. It's still the top-selling non-Marvel DC title by a long shot. And, again, is hovering just outside that top 10. And, you know, if we hadn't had some of these event titles this month, it would have been within that top 10, I think.
I'm really surprised that the Hulk is still doing as good as it is.
I would agree with that. That's back up at rank 8 with issue number 4 doing 90,555 units. I mean, while that's a drop of 9.5% from the previous issue, I agree. This shouldn't be doing this strong, and I think once the first storyline is over, it probably won't be doing this strong.
I mean, it's still riding high off of World War Hulk. The other, you know, it's like, this is how late? I mean, it's got a February item code on it, and, you know, it's a couple of months late.
It's one of those where it's dropped quite a bit.
Well, I'm just saying you ordered this book in February and it's coming out, you know, in June, right?
Yeah, but that's not the latest book we got. You go up two slots. Ultimates 3 had a January order code.
Yeah.
But most stuff this month has an April order code. So, yeah, it's noticeably late. But, you know, 90,000 units, can't really argue with that too much.
Oh, you're still reading that book.
It's slow. It's one of those that not much seems to happen in every issue. So that's part of why I think after this first story arc where people think it's like, okay, I finally got an A story out of it, that we may see people bailing. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's riding high on the success of the movie and the popularity of the character and, again, the World War Hulk stuff. I would agree that it's surprising it's doing this well at this point. Also spinning out of World War Hulk down at rank 16 is Scar, Son of Hulk, number 1. That opened with 73,662 units, which is fairly strong. Not quite that 90-plus thousand that the Hulk itself has. And this is one that I'm really going to be curious to see how that second issue does, because I think we may see a stronger-than-average drop on that. It, from my vantage point, did not do a good job establishing the main character and really getting me interested in the series. We'll see what other people think along those lines.
I'm astonished because, like, the new Hulk action figure, so let's move out of comics for a second, there's a Scar Son of Hulk action figure.
Already? Wow.
You know, it's like, yeah, well, it's part of this Hulk line. It's like a build a Fin Fang Foom.
Uh-huh.
I haven't been buying them. They're like $15 a piece at retail. But I've been in toy stores. You know, I go into toy stores and Targets and, you know, Walmart, Toys R Us, et cetera. And I've seen Scar a number of times. And it's just, you know, kids are probably going to look at that. Like, who the hell is Scar? Why would I want an action figure of him? He's had one comic come out so far. You know,
well, it's if the kids have even seen any comics, much less that comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just seems to be an interesting idea, but a questionable launch for the character. They should have established the character before blowing up the planet or part of the planet or whatever the hell they did. The other number one we've got that's really interesting is just outside the top 20, and that's in rank 21, and that's Trinity number 1. It opened with 70,400 units. Issue 2 dropped by 9.71% to get down to 63,565 units. The third issue dropped another 4.12% to 60,949 units. And the fourth issue dropped another 3.64%, taking it all the way down to 58,729 units. You know, there'd been all that talk about event fatigue a while back, and that was certainly a concern I had, and to a degree still have. It hasn't been a problem yet, but what we are seeing is kind of a weekly fatigue with the DC titles, because the second issue dropped it below the lowest points for Countdown. Now, the curve we're seeing so far on the first four issues, pretty much in line with what we saw for 52 in Countdown. I don't know if this has the same first 12 issues being returnable or not. If so, these numbers may be kind of not including a potential 20% possible return activity. So the actual sales could be a little higher than what Diamond's reporting at this point, as was the case with Countdown in 52. In terms of the percentage of that first issue sales, the curve we're seeing is a bit steeper on Trinity than either for Countdown or 52. And it's interesting because the drop between the first and second issue with Trinity kind of tracked more or less with how it did for 52. Countdown, on the other hand, tended to retain its sales better than 52 did. Trinity, on the other hand, is losing faster so far than either Countdown or 52 did. And I think a lot of people, it's the economy, it's the fact it's $2.99 cover price, it's, you know, the third year of weekly sales. I think a lot of people are just saying, hey, I can't afford this. So I'm very curious to see if we see the same basic curve or not that we've seen with 52 and Countdown for Trinity. If so, we could easily see these units falling into the 45,000 range, possibly even the 40,000 range.
Well, I mean, we were talking the 10 book, you know, if you had to cut back to 10 books a month, right?
Yeah, on the forum, yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you had to, even if you only bought DC, if you had to cut back to 10 books a month, would four of them be Trinity?
No, but I also doubt I'd have very many miniseries if I only cut back to 10.
Yeah, but I mean, I look at this and I know it's being ordered and everything, but, you know, of the where it's falling in the DC, you know, thing, it's like about, it's the fourth highest selling DC book.
Well, the only ones above it are Justice Society, Justice League, and Final Crisis.
Right. And it's like, wow, if I was just getting DC and I was getting 10 books, there's no way I'd be buying Trinity. I'm sorry. I mean, maybe if I was getting 20 books a month and they were only DC, it might fit in. But the fact that it's selling as good as it is just means there's people buying, you know, they're certainly not making the tough decisions, I think, or else I'm just way out of step with, because there's so many good DC series out there.
Yeah, but if you look a little further below at rank 32, we've got Titans number 3 doing 54,485 units, which is about a little under a 5% drop from that second issue. And that's down from the 75,565 that the first issue did. And there's no way I would say that's in the top 10 DC books right now, because, frankly, I've been very underwhelmed by the quality of it, and I would have expected a much stronger drop by this point.
I'm thinking Titans is rolling along on a wave of just people like Titans.
I love Titans.
You know, so they're buying the Titans book, right? I love Titans too, you know, so you're buying the Titans book because you don't have to make that tough decision, right?
True.
So you're buying it. I mean, if you were buying only 10 or 20 DC books, you know, let's say you're only buying 10 DC books, Titans probably wouldn't be in that group either.
Well, you know, again, this is a discussion we've been having on the forum, if you know, about readers versus budgets and, you know, if you had to cut back like that. And I mean, for us right now, it's a very theoretical discussion. But if we see a price hike where these $2.99 books start going to $3.99 or even $3.50, but I think they're kind of going to skip that and go to the $3.99, some of this would be a much less theoretical discussion for me and a lot of readers, I think. You know,
yeah.
There are finite budgets to be had here. And I mean, this month, DC published, and not to pick on DC, because Marvel's in the same boat too. DC had 82 new items, Marvel had 95 new items. So out of the top 300, 190 of them were accounted for by DC and Marvel. That's just a hell of a lot of comics to be coming out with. And when you're doing event crossovers like Final Crisis, like Secret Invasion, or even for that matter, the Ultimate Origins, which ties that entire line of comics together and stuff, you're kind of telling readers by implication, we expect you to be getting a hell of a lot of these books, if not all of them. And there's going to come a point where a lot of readers are just going to say, you know, if I've got to cut, I'm going to cut them all. I'm not going to cut just a few.
That's right. And, you know, taking it off, I don't want to, you know, pick on DC. Go to Marvel. Same thing. They've got essentially a weekly book with Amazing Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man. I'm actually enjoying this weekly book. But if I had to only get 10 Marvel comics,
yeah,
three of them would not be Amazing Spider-Man. I would just stop getting Amazing Spider-Man. You know, if I had to get only 10 Marvel books, it would not make the cut. And that's the thing, is like there have to be some people with budgets high enough that they're able to buy, let's say, 25 to 30 books a month for some of these to be, you know, doing as well as they're doing, I think. And if the prices do go up and people trim back to, you know, only getting 15 to 20 books instead of 25 to 30, I'm wondering what's gonna drop out, because I think that certain books are riding high just on the fact that, you know, if people are getting them, they're gonna, you know, if they have enough money, they're gonna get this book, and the book has enough crossover appeal that, you know, Spider-Man, for instance, might be common to, you know, 30 people's lists, whereas some of the other books that each one of them are getting out of their 20 or 25 comics are all different. And that buoys the Spider-Man title up because it's common. But maybe it's near, you know, the bottom of that top 20 for most of those people. And for some people, it wouldn't be. Some people just love Spider-Man and they're going to get Spider-Man.
Well, it would be interesting for our listeners to go to our forum. We've got a comic budgets versus comic readership thread in there now that Rick M. started. And some of his comments were along the lines of how he's surprised that we're surprised on how low some of these numbers are doing. And he understands it based on, you know, he's got a limited budget, etc. I'd really appreciate it if as many of our listeners as possible would get onto our forum. I've got a series of about 8 or so questions on budgeting. And just let me know how you budget. Do you do it when the books are ordered, when they ship? Do you do it on a monthly or weekly basis? Questions along those lines. Because, you know, I'm looking at these numbers from how they tend to be trending and stuff like that, making educated guesses on how different types of readers budget, how they pick what they buy, how they pick what they don't buy, which is, you know, equally important. And the more information I have on that, the better the analysis I can do. And certainly, I don't pretend to be a typical comic book reader. I'm not. Out of this list, I'm getting, you know, probably at least half, if not more than that. And, you know, you're kind of in the same boat there, Bob, of getting Yep. just a ton of these things. So, you know, I would be curious to hear what our listeners think. Again, like, I mean, go down to rank 53. We've got Marvel 1985, number 2. It did 40,114 or so units. Again, this is an estimate. That's a drop of about 27.25% from the first issue. Now, from my standpoint, this makes total sense to me because of really the poor way they marketed this book. You know, they're now saying it's going to tie in with the Old Man Wolverine storyline we saw up at that 90,000 plus units, that it's going to tie into the current stuff going on with Fantastic Four, which is up at rank 26 with nearly 61,000 units. You know, I think people who are, because of economic constraints, being forced to be a lot more selective would have skipped this entirely. Heck, I skipped it entirely without those kind of major constraints and only started picking it up because you recommended it. For retailers to think people would get that first issue and not get that second issue, that makes sense to me.
And, you know, you'd almost have to be an archaeologist to even notice that it's supposed to tie into those other stories. I mean, they didn't make that really apparent.
No, they did an ad in Marvel Previews when the third issue was solicited, but that should have been when the first one was.
Yeah, but most people don't even pick up and read previews.
That's right? True. That's true. Actually, that would be another good question for our listeners is how many of you are getting previews and how many are not? I mean, how do you find out about new titles?
Yeah. And the one other thread that would just be really in the context of Mayo Report, too. I mean, you know, go on to the one about if you had to only buy 10 comics, or maybe you do only buy 10 comics, what would they be and why?
Yeah.
I'm really interested, you know, because it was just a really interesting exercise to go through, especially, you know, buying 150 some odd comics saying, okay, if I had to cut back to 10, what would those 10 be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, you know, cutting out an awful lot of good. In my opinion, I enjoy almost all of the comics that I get. When I stop enjoying something, I stop buying it. You know, I didn't like Scar, for instance, so I didn't buy it past issue 1. You know, it's just I don't buy books that I'm not liking, and I'm still getting 150 comic books, you know. So, but if I had to really cut back to 10, what would they be?
Yeah,
I'd really be interested, you know, because would it be what the top 10 are here on the Diamond numbers, or would it not? Would it be something very different? And that's something that would be interesting from the standpoint, you know, going back to what you were saying is, how would this list change, you know, because people will start making those decisions if they jack the price up again.
Yeah. Well, and conversely, a lot of people go on the theory that if Marvel and DC publish less titles, they'd make more on the ones they do publish. And on the one hand, budgeting-wise, that makes sense. If I don't have to choose 10 out of 100-something from Marvel and 100-and-something or whatever from DC, but could choose out of 50 or whatever, they might be more likely to hit my list or whatever. Flip side, you know, they're still making money on some of even these lower-selling books. You know, there are a couple that, you know, I'm starting to wonder how they could be making any money on with some of their really lower-selling books.
Well, I think it's trades, right?
It's not. I mean, and that's why we're seeing some of these things like All New Atom getting canceled. Because you look at the trade stuff, and they're doing, 1,000, 2,000 units initially. And if they have any reorder activity, it's completely flying under the radar. I would have to go look up what the Infinity Inc. trade did, because I'm pretty sure they've had a first trade for that. And I'm not even sure that it would have hit the list, because the trades only goes down to 100. So there comes a point where they are sort of cannibalizing their own sales, but on the other hand, there's no reason to think that if DC was publishing half the number of books that a title like Infinity Inc. would have sold any better than it's doing now. But, you know, again, it comes down to how many readers are being forced to not get that book simply because there are 10 books they want more than that, or however many books they can afford. Jumping down a ways, in rank 141, we've got the second issue of Rassel from Cartoon Books. That's doing 14,048 units, which is down a little over 14% from the first issue. But for a independent book to be doing over 14,000, I think is outstanding. There are not that many that are doing it, much less a new title that's quarterly. You know, a new property, for that matter, that's quarterly. So I think it's a good sign for Jeff Smith. And what else do we have in here that looks interesting? We talked about the reorder activity for Secret Invasion, which shows up at ranks 172 and 185 for the second and first issues, respectively. The second issue did 9,784 units of reorder activity. That first issue did 8,576 units of reorder activity. And, of course, both of those beat out a fair number of other comics that were new this month. The reorder activity for Final Crisis was in rank 207 with 6,875 units. Caliber from Radical actually went up in sales a little bit with its third issue. It's now at 5,672 units, and that's an increase of about a little under 300 units, or about 5.5%. And for a miniseries to see an increase between issues 2 and 3, not very common. So I think that's a good sign for Radical. It's also a great series.
Hercules is edging it a little bit.
It seems to be a little bit stronger, the two titles, but it's also seeming to be trending down a little bit. Not by much, only a few hundred units. I think that possibly by that fifth issue, we may see Caliber overtake Hercules. We may not, but we could. It'll be interesting to see if that happens or not.
I think a lot of stores are just not buying this because I've actually looked because I was looking for one of the covers of Caliber number 2, and I went into about 10 different comic shops when I was on vacation. Not a single one of them had a single issue, or single back issue, let's say. About 5 of them carried Radical Comics. You know, 5 of them didn't have any of the smaller independent. But of the ones that carried them, they had the current issue. They didn't have any back issues. They didn't have back issues in the back issue bins or on the racks. Hmm. So they had had a full sellout of the early issues of those books. Which once you get going on a, that's the thing though, it's like once you get going on a miniseries like that, that's kind of a barrier to entry, right? If someone discovers Caliber or discovers Hercules and issue 3 or issue 4 is out and they want to pick up the earlier issues and they can't, then are they going to buy issues 4 and 5? Are they going to say, well, this looks really cool, maybe I'll just buy the trade when it comes out?
But the question is, how many of those people who say that actually buy the trades?
Right.
Somebody on the forum, and I forget who it was, so forgive me on that, was saying that, you know, for a lot of things, they say, hey, I'll wait for the trade, and wind up never getting the trade. And I think that's a very common occurrence, because there's no impetus to get that trade the minute it's released. There's the belief it'll always be on the store shelves. And that's not always going to be the case.
Well, there's the other piece of that is, how are trades marketed in a shop? I mean, if you're not pre-ordering them, right? What I find a lot of times, with, you know, because comics, they're on the rack. They're full front. You see the image and everything. Trades, even new ones, a lot of shops put them on kind of like a bookshelf kind of thing, and you see the spine facing out. So unless you're really digging through and searching for them, a lot of times you're not even going to see a good presentation. And that has a lot to do with physical space considerations, too. There are so many different trades, and shops have a finite amount of rack space to put things in.
But at least for that first week, if the shop can get the trade over by the new comics full face out, it's in their best interest to do so, because they'll sell
them. No, a lot of shops do that, but again, you know, a trade has that longer shelf life, so...
Well, yes and no. It'll sit on the shelf longer. That's not to say it'll necessarily sell. The last two columns that Brian Hibbs did over on Comic Book Resources in his Tilting at Windmills column were about how he had a year's worth of his point-of-sales system information. He was looking over it and realizing he had a bunch of trades that hadn't moved over the last year. And a few of them were ones he had just kind of thought had. But, you know, you get that much stock, there's no way you can keep track of it in your head. I am amazed that Brian Hibbs was able to do so long, so successfully, run his store without a point-of-sales system. I mean, there's no way I could do that. But, you know, he's now pulling a lot of that stuff and, you know, trying to get it off his shelf and you know, blow it out at discount prices to at least recoup the cost of it as much as he can. But that stuff, an Aquaman trade, even a Ms. Marvel trade, certainly an Infinity Inc. trade, some of these second or third or fourth tier, you know, books from Marvel and DC, they're generating a trade or two every year.
A lot of them every 6 months, because they only put like one story arc in a trade. It's not even a year's worth of comics.
Yeah. So, I mean, does the store need to be getting all of those? If they do, are they going to sell them? Are they going to sit on the store shelves? I think that while trades, because they have that ISBN number, because they can sit on shelves longer, there's the myth that they have an active sales level on that longer shelf life than a lot of them do. Now, I mean, because you're going to have those at both ends of the spectrum. You're going to have those that they go to the shelf, theoretically could sell for the next 50 years, but frankly, nobody's going to buy them by and large over the next 50 years. Other end of the spectrum, you've got Watchmen. There's like a million copies in print right now, sitting on store shelves at bookstores, etc. So, I mean, you can't really point to either one saying, you know, that's typical. You can certainly point to the lower end as being more typical. But, you know, it really makes me wonder how strong that trade sales life is for the average trade.
Well, I think that, you know, a trade for a miniseries, you know, that people might come to pick up, and it just seems to me like you have a different sales profile for something that is a standalone miniseries. Even if it's a standalone story arc, then, you know, this particular story arc in The Atom, or this particular story arc in Ms. Marvel, or something like that. Those mid-tier Marvel and DC books, I question whether the companies really need to put those out as trades or not, period. I think that regular non-event comic books should be comic books. And I think the sales, you know, support that for the most part. Some people wait for the trade and buy the trade, but there is no reason why every single Ms. Marvel arc needs to be a trade paperback.
I mean, do they deserve to get collected? Do they warrant getting collected? And I would agree, no, most of it doesn't. However, and we've talked about this a bit before, do the publishers need to compile them into a trade? I'm a little afraid that, yeah, they may have to in some cases. Again, picking on Infinity Inc., just because it's such a easy example for this. Not trying to slam DC, not trying to slam that book, but it's selling 9,496 units with that 10th issue. They need to recoup some of that in trade if they can.
Yeah, but I guess my point is that if the way they're recouping that is selling it to Brian Hibbs, and it sits on his shelf for a year and he doesn't sell it and then has to blow it out at 50% off or something, you know, are comic shops going to start wising up and not buying those things unless some customer specifically asks for them?
Yes, I certainly think stores are wising up to that. The columns from Brian Hibbs are a prime example of that. But from the publisher's perspective, they sold it to the retailer. They made their money.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I don't disagree with that. I think the publishers are making their money back, but at whose expense, you know? And I don't want to see the comic shops going out of business. So, I mean,
it's their
the
own
comic
expense.
Shops need to, you know, need to really start wising up so that they stay in business. I mean, ultimately, it'll come back to haunt them.
Yeah, by wising up, though, it hurts the publisher in the long term. And this is one where the proliferation of trades has been cutting into the monthly books because, yeah, people who are on the fence on Infinity Inc., I can pick up the trade. And sure enough, by and large, they probably will be able to. Same thing with Simon Dark, same thing with a lot of other books that maybe, you know, could use a bit of a, I don't want to say bump in sales, but stronger sales on the monthly side if waiting for the trade weren't so practical, affordable, and attractive to readers. This is something that publishers have been fostering over the last decade, and you know, I think it's part of why we're starting to see a lot of titles getting to the point where even just a couple of years ago, I would have said, hey, you know, this book is in the danger zone. It could get canceled. Now, not so much. I mean, Birds of Prey is currently at, let's see, it was at rank 101. It did 21,583 units. 3 years ago, I think this would have put it under consideration for cancellation. These days, I'm not so convinced. Now, should they be looking at it? Should they be trying to beef it up and get it to where it sells better? Yeah, certainly. Are they necessarily in a panic over it? I think they'd be more worried about Catwoman, which they're ending, which is below that. The Manhunter series they keep bringing back, but's now doing in the 15,686 unit range. But that's almost more of a mini-series type ongoing series these days. They trot it out for 5 to 6 issues and then, you know, let it fade away for a year or so before bringing it back out. And again, Marvel's got a couple of books that are doing down in this area, too. They've got X-Men First Class selling at the 14,000 range. They've got Amazing Spider-Girl, which has always had a history of will it stick around or not. It's currently doing 15,652 units. And for me, it comes down to, has the comic book readership shrunk so much that these are reasonable expectations for an ongoing series? And, you know, apparently it has. You know, it used to be if it dropped by 20,000, that would be a bad sign. Now when it drops under 20,000, it's like, well, it may be around for a bit longer. Or maybe they should be happy with those sales. I have a hard time reconciling a top-selling book doing 175,000 plus units and having over half the list selling under a tenth of that number. And these are some good books like BPRD, Invincible. You know, there's a ton of great things down at this end of the spectrum. I don't know. I have a hard time, like I said, reconciling, you know, how big the potential audience of comic book readers is and how small the actual audience is for a lot of really good titles. But that's nothing new. It's also a little surprising how many Image titles are near the bottom of the top 300.
But that's not really that surprising when you see that they dipped down a little bit and got overtaken by IDW.
That's true. But what gets me with the IDW is a lot of their titles are also down at this area. I think part of what's helping IDW so much is Angel After the Fall, because they had 2 issues come out this month, and both of those sold over 47,000 units. It's in rank 43 and 45. So, I mean, that helped a lot. Matter of fact, I think that was probably, if you take the sales of just Angel After the Fall, including the 3,364 issues that somehow snuck in for issue 10, it gives us a total of 98,286 units compared to everything else they did, which actually beat that out with 124,376 units. But that's still a huge percentage for one title to be doing for them.
Agreed.
But they've got that. They've got Transformers. They've got Star Trek. They've got Doctor Who. I mean, they've got actually a fairly diverse lineup and a fairly, you know, strong roster of titles. So I do think they're one to be watching.
Speaking of IDW, at rank 272, FX. Now, I'm not completely remembering accurately on this, but this one, John Byrne's doing the art.
Right.
John Byrne is not invested in this at all. He said, like, well, for $10,000 an issue, I'll draw whatever you give me or something. And I don't remember if 10,000 was the number or not. But for the sake of argument, if it is $10,000, if this guy is paying John Byrne 10 grand, he's got to be losing money if he's only selling 3,442 copies.
Well, again, that's through Diamond. He may be selling some at conventions and stuff like that.
But even so, I mean, you got to figure how much is he actually making per issue.
Yeah.
You know, you can figure Diamond, you know, they're giving a discount to people. I mean, IDW's taking a cut. You know, if he's making more than a buck and a half out of that $4, I'd be surprised.
Well, let's see. At $3.99, let's multiply that by 0.4, figuring the other 60% is split between Diamond and the retailer. That gets it down to, we'll say, $1.59, a little over, per issue, which is going to IDW, the creative team, et cetera, et cetera. He's selling, let's see, 3,442 units. That's only bringing in $5,472.78, even if all of it went to that.
Right. And, you know, that's all I'm saying is...
Oh, that's why we're going to see a trade of this.
Yeah.
You know, that's not counting printing costs, and that's assuming it's you know, 10,000 or whatever for...
Yeah, and you got the editorial, you got, yeah, exactly, printing costs, you got the colorist, you got, you know, letterer.
But, I mean, that's why these days, if you're going to go into doing your own comic, and I certainly think people should, there's a definite market out there for it, you got to run the numbers first. You know, you got to say, what's a realistic expectation for sales? Try to find something similar to it on the rack. See how that's doing. And if anyone has questions on that, email me. I'm happy to help people out on this sort of thing. But then take that, cut it in half. Be conservative. Not everyone's going to have the next best thing. Even if they do, not everyone else is going to agree or notice it's the next best thing. So when you run these numbers, you want to assume kind of a worst case and make sure you can at least break even. And for FX, selling the 3,400 plus units, that's good. Is that realistic expectations? If I were going into a indie comic having John Byrne on the art, yeah, I think actually that probably is. I might have even estimated a little higher, to be honest. And this started out at 6,942 units. But you've got to, again, figure the standard, you know, kind of attrition and how that's going to drop significantly each issue. And this one actually dropped a lot larger than average between that first and second issue. But that's, again, why you want to start conservative when you work the numbers. Figure out how much your creative costs are going to be. Figure out how much your printing costs are going to be. Any shipping costs you're going to have. Any revenue you can get from ads. You know, I assume this guy had the essentially the money to burn on this project, and he just wanted to do it for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, and it's certainly, it's really cool to have your story illustrated by John Byrne, you know, but I'm just saying, it's just, I remember reading, you know, that he was paying John X amount of dollars, and I don't remember exactly how much that was, but then I just saw this here, and I'm thinking, wow, that doesn't seem like it can be covering the costs. It's just didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's no knock against it. I mean, I'm enjoying it well enough. I mean, I read the book. I'm one of those 3,400 some odd people. You know,
as
you're another
I.
one.
Yeah.
You know,
it's fun series and stuff. But is it hitting its maximum potential audience? I mean, right now, where else other than the Star Trek Assignment Earth series? Where else can you be getting John Bernard? Much less anywhere John Bernard on superheroes.
Yeah,
this kind of runs a little against Kirkman's theory. That he's recently been putting out of, you know, if you give people a choice for your stuff between creator-owned and Marvel DC known property, they're going to go for the known. So if you want to boost your sales or whatever on your own creative stuff, let that be the only place people can get your work, which on the face of it does make sense. On the other hand, once we get to that point where, like we are here with John Byrne, of that's the only place you can get his art and it's not shooting through the roof, I really doubt we're going to see a huge jump for Walking Dead, for Invincible, for Astounding Wolfman, when Kirkman's work through Marvel dries up and the only place you can be reading Kirkman stories is in his own creator-owned books. And maybe we will, but I don't expect it.
Well, I guess it's how many people are going to make that crossover and still be, you know, loyal over there. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, at this point, I don't know if Byrne's the greatest example, because Byrne has cooled considerably.
That's
over the last, you know, X number of years, you know. I mean, if Bendis, you know, moved over, you know, or something like that, or Morrison was just doing it somewhere else, you know, maybe that would be a little more. And, you know, some of the artists in particular that are hot right now, if they moved over And I think Kirkman's also pointing out that you can make a decent living only selling, you know, 6,000, you know, comics or something. I mean, whatever. Well, Walking Dead sells pretty good.
Oh, yeah. You know? So the 20,000+ units. But at one point it was doing in the 6,000.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a writer, you can do more than one book. You know, you could do three or four. And if you're doing it creator-owned, self-published, you don't have this corporate monstrosity to be supporting. You just got to pay your artist, pay for the printing, and maybe a few other things. You don't have... Again, the Marvel DC books can't afford to be selling at this level because the editorial staff, the production costs, the corporate infrastructure, the things that DC rightly needs to be able to run and do their thing. And same with Marvel, same to lesser degrees with some of these other companies. So, I mean, there's certainly some wisdom to his words, and I certainly don't totally disagree with them. And I certainly would like to see more creators doing creator-owned work and getting some more diversity out there, because from my standpoint, it is really not good for the industry for a publisher, in this case Marvel, but really for any publisher, to be accounting for well over half the sales for the top 300 comics. I mean, if something were to happen to that, I mean, that's putting too many eggs in one basket. You know, that's just not a good move.
Another thing that was very interesting to me was this Sky Doll down here. $5.99 book, and had reorders of 2,650, you know, that got it up into the, you know, top 300 here.
That's one that initially had 15,623. Who's doing that? That's a Marvel thing.
It's a Marvel thing, but it's kind of like a reprint of I think it's French.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that one's got to be making them some good money, because, I mean, they're selling it for a decent price, and the production, I mean, they have to translate it from French into English, but, I mean, the art, it's essentially a reprint because it's already been produced completely in France, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, other than the translation and, you know, some other production work that has to be done on it, it's been written already, it's been drawn already. It's not that old, so one would imagine the digital stats were already existent for it. You know, so that's pretty good. You know, talking profits, you know, they got to be making a decent, you know, amount of money off of that one.
Well, it's outselling Amazing Spider-Girl, which is at half the price. So even with licensing, even with some production fees associated to it, yeah, that's got to be doing pretty well for them.
Which maybe brings you to a model, you know, it's like there's a lot of good comics being done in Europe, you know, translate some of them and bring them over and expose them to the audience. Certainly, I think that there's no way that would have sold, regardless of how good it is, without being an imprint under Marvel and having the Marvel machine behind it. There's no way that would have sold like that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a lot to be said for being in that front half of previews and being one of those premier publishers.
But even that, you know, if that was an Image book, it would not. They're in the front half of previews, and they're a premier publisher, and, you know, it would not have sold that well as an Image book.
There are a couple of Image books that had less activity, you know, than that reorder activity, you know, and some of them are pretty good books. So we got Gemini number 2 down there at rank 298 with 2,582 units, which, ouch, that's a nearly 31% drop. That's pretty harsh. I think the art style is turning people off on that. It's actually a pretty good story. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Kirkman's able to kind of shake things up at Image now that he's a partner there. I hope he can. Because there are a lot of these things that I'm seeing down at this end of the lower end of the spectrum for Image that I think should be doing a lot better. And let's see, quick run through of the dollars in terms of price points and stuff. If you'd bought everything on this list, you'd have spent $1,002.28. The overwhelming majority of these items were $2.99, with 181 of them at that price point, and 68 at the $3.99 price point. Only 21 items at the $3.50 price point, so we may well jump over that if and when a price hike comes. And over a third of the list, actually nearly two-thirds of the list, 175 of these items had an issue number of 12 or less. So a lot of these things are kind of the new upstarts, which, hey, that's fine, that's good. But it goes back to transient sales. Doesn't matter how good some of these things are if it's only a six-issue series and there's nothing to get after that.
Right.
Anything else we want to talk about, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that should pretty much take care of us.
Sounds good. And if people have questions on these numbers, or if they have topics they'd like us to discuss in future episodes, by all means, go to our forums, let us know there, or shoot us emails at theguys@comicbookpage.com. We're happy to answer questions you have on this. I think there's a lot of confusion and some misinformation about how comics are selling and some of the factors involved. I'm not going to claim to have all the answers, but certainly if I can answer your questions, I'm happy to do so. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics has usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.